This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. Today, you'll meet a 13-year-old who lives on a ranch in the Black Hills of South Dakota. She raises steers to sell in the fall, rides her horse Dandy, and feeds the chickens. Oh, and did I mention? She's one fine classical violinist. Here's our host, one of America's finest concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you and welcome, everybody. Today we're coming to you from ALF's auditorium at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. But more importantly, we're here at the university to help celebrate the 40th anniversary of an amazing treasure that's right here on campus, the National Music Museum. That's a Javanese gamelan, one of the largest outside of Java, being played by the teenagers on today's show during our tour of the museum yesterday. But that gamelan is just one of the thousands of instruments from all the world's cultures in the museum's collections. There's what's considered to be the oldest cello, made around 1538 by Andrea Amati, the first luthier. There are Stradivarius instruments, too, including an extremely rare Stradivarius guitar. There's a full family of saxophones made by the inventor himself, Adolf Sax, and some whimsical instruments too, like a huge collection of harmonicas. I do love the sound of the gamelan. Anna, did you guys enjoy getting to play it? I guess playing them, right? Since a gamelan is made up of a variety of instruments. What was it like?
It was very different. It was hard to try and play the note while trying to dampen the last note that you played.
You're like tapping your head and rubbing your belly at the same time to get a sound going. But you're really here to play in the Luna Quartet with your teenage colleagues. Would you please introduce them all?
Well, I'm Anna Humphrey. I'm 17. Second violinist is Emma Richmond. She is 15. The cellist is Nora Doyle, and she is 17, and Alexandra Sophocles on viola, and she is 18.
You guys won the silver medal and the Haydn Prize at the 2013 St. Paul String Quartet competition. So I take it we're going to hear some Haydn right now?
Yeah, we're going to play the Haydn's Opus 76, number 5, the finale movement.
When you are ready, please take it from the top. Thank you. Luna Quartet playing the finale from Haydn's Quartet in D, Opus 76, number 5. Anna Humphrey, 17 years old, and Emma Richmond, 15, violin. Alexandra Sophocles, 18-year-old violist, and Nora Doyle, cello. All from the Minneapolis area. These guys are coached by Nancy Oliveros at the Artaria Chamber Music School. Well, you guys, if I had a Haydn prize to give out, I would certainly give it to you. And contrary to your ears' evidence, they're not actually playing on the museum's matched set of Amadis. That was just an extraordinary, unified and gleeful performance. I actually, Alexandra, Haydn seems to fit this group's nature, am I right?
Yes, well, the piece is a very happy and energetic piece, and it's very smiley. We like to smile a lot when we play as well, and it's nice to play a piece that embodies that smiley nature. Because, you know, when you play something that's darker and more mysterious like Shostakovich, it's a little less appropriate to smile, and sometimes we have to contain ourselves a bit more.
You can grimace. You can grimace through Shostakovich. Yes. That you can get away with it that way. Emma, you say it's a technically challenging piece. It seemed like ebullient and bubbly, but it's got some difficulties?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this Haydn, and one of the first challenges was actually starting the piece together. We tried many ways of cueing it, different sniffs, different upbeats, and nothing seemed to be working, so we figured out that if Anna taps her thumb twice on the neck of her instrument before we start, then we come in together, so that's what we've been doing after that.
Anna, not a lot of downtime for the first violin, eh?
Yeah, no kidding. There are a lot of runs in this piece, so it's kind of stressful for the first violinist, but at the same time, it's really rewarding. When you hit, you know, the really high notes, it's just the greatest feeling. So.
Well, the technical challenges and the work that you've done obviously pay off, but I know you guys really get a big charge out of sight reading.
We like to come over to my house and sight read music and rehearse in my attic, actually. It's my studio up there. And so one day we were up there, we were sight reading the second movement of Brahms' C minor quartet, which is a lovely...
Pretty much the most gorgeous thing ever.
It's so gorgeous. And we just sort of get the feeling of the piece right away, and our coach was so moved that we made her cry.
Aww.
So
I can see it now up in your attic. What, very, very, very La Boheme. Very, very Mimi. Well, gosh, the emotion, the communication, the happiness, all of it came through. What a great way to start the show. Ladies, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Best of luck. The Luna Quartet from the Minneapolis area. Anna Humphrey, 17, and Emma Richmond, 15, are violinists. Alexandra Sophocles, 18, and Nora Doyle, 17.
As Chris mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Luna String Quartet played the gamelan yesterday at the National Music Museum here in Vermilion. It was such an incredible and beautiful sight that we've posted a video on FromTheTop.org. Over the last 8 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded nearly $2 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to FromTheTop.org to learn more.
Hi, my name is Maya Buchanan. I'm 13 years old, and I play the violin. I live on a ranch in the middle of the Black Hills National Forest, and my siblings and I raise steer. We each have 4 of our own steer, and we have 2 horses, Dandy and Square Bear, and we have 30 chickens, and sometimes the best stories are about the chickens. One time, my dad and I were going to the chicken coop. We biked down to our chicken coop, and we were picking the eggs. And this one hen would not move. She wouldn't get out of the box. So you can bring a stick with you, and you kind of just stick it under her and kind of lift her up with the stick. So my dad was lifting her up with the stick, and I was going to grab the eggs that were underneath her. And all of a sudden, I saw an egg fall, and I just saw her lay an egg. And it was all slimy and gross and warm. So my dad decided that we should take it to our house. So we took it to our house, and we fried it, and we ate it. And it was the freshest egg I've ever had.
This is Paco Bell Cannon, and my sister Jenna will be starting.
Even though we live on a ranch, we're a classical music family also. My sister is a violinist, and my brother is a violist. And sometimes we play together, although it doesn't work out all the time. But one time that it did work out is we played Paco Bell Canon for my dad on his birthday because that is one of his absolutely favorite pieces.
What a wonderful portrait there, Maya. What a great way of getting to know you. And now you and I are going to play one of your favorite pieces. Tell everyone what it is.
The Beethoven Spring Sonata, First Movement.
We're doing today's show at the National Music Museum in your home state of South Dakota, and the museum has an amazing collection of early pianos. And so we thought, why not bring out a piano similar to the one that Beethoven might have played in 1800 or 1801 when this sonata was written? I'm going to accompany Maya on a reproduction of a Viennese forte piano made by Johann Schantz around 1800. We're using a reproduction in this case because it's beefy enough to be brought up to the modern pitch of A440. So, looking forward to this, Maya. Here we go. Thank you. Buchanan, 13 years old, from way outside of Rapid City, South Dakota, playing the first movement of Beethoven's Spring Sonata. Maya, that was wonderful.
Thanks.
So nice to not have to fight against a big old Steinway, huh?
Yeah.
She was drowning me out. I loved that. Such a sweet sound that you have in that piece. So I love the contrast between your life in the Black Hills and your life studying classical music. For example, you do a lot of traveling just to study the violin. Where do you go?
Yes, we fly to Houston to see Paul Cantor.
Oh, well, we love Paul Cantor. He's one of the great violin pedagogues now at Rice in Houston. But I understand that you've recently taken on a student yourself.
Yes, I have a student, Jaina. She's 7 years old. And one day at the Suzuki Music Institute of Dallas, where I have my lessons, I just found an open room where a guitar teacher used to teach there and wasn't teaching there anymore, so it was just an empty room. So I just decided that would be my studio, so I just put my name up and turned it into my studio.
Hang out your shingle, and you found this 7-year-old girl? And
yeah, I put up a sign-up sheet.
Yeah.
So she just knocked on the door, and I gave her a lesson, and I've been giving her lessons.
Oh, well, that's such dedication and such great communication, you know, between teacher and student and between performer and audience. Just, it really comes across, Maya. So yeah. Bravo for that, Beethoven, and best of luck in all of your pursuits.
Thanks
for being with us.
Thank you.
Maya Buchanan, 13 years old, a girl who studies in Houston but lives on a ranch in the Black Hills. We're going to move now from the early fortepiano back to the modern Steinway, this time in the very capable hands of a 15-year-old pianist from Brooklyn. Here's Evan Lee, one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists, performing Franz Liszt's Transcendental Etude No. 4, Mazeppa.
Thank you.
Evan Lee, 15 years old, from Brooklyn, New York, performing Mazeppa by Franz Liszt. Evan, I know you studied with Victoria Mushkat-Kohl at Juilliard Pre-College, and you said she did something that turned out to be the most important change in your musical life. What happened in your first lesson with Victoria?
I went into my first lesson. I was excited. I was nervous. And I brought in a Chopin concerto, which I really shouldn't have done. But I went in. She pretended to listen to me for about two pages. And then she told me to stop and was like, no, we have to basically start from scratch because I wasn't ready to play something like that. So I didn't understand what she was doing to me at that time. Like, I had no idea, but since she was my teacher, I trusted her and went on with the first year. It was a difficult first year because it was just a huge change for me. But after that, the second year, I really understood why she wanted me to start over, and my musicianship really grew from that experience.
So it certainly wasn't a lack of technique that she was reacting to. I mean, clearly, you know, this death-defying etude you just make mincemeat of. And so was it really just, you know, that she felt you weren't musically mature enough and you needed to start on things?
Yes.
My gosh, I just envy you. At no time do his fingers leave his arms. I can vouch for it. It's kind of amazing. We totally lost ourselves in this wonderful, evocative etude of yours, Evan. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Best of luck. Evan Lee, 15 years old, from Brooklyn, New York.
If you like From the Top, make sure you like us on Facebook. It's the easiest way to stay in touch with everything From the Top. You'll find daily videos, articles, photos, and a thriving community of fans. Join the fun by going to facebook.com/fromthetopfans.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations, and from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. From the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need, on the web at jkcf.org. And from New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music, online at necmusic.edu. This is NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from ALF's auditorium at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion, and we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the National Music Museum here at the university. Up next, a talented 16-year-old guitarist from Minnesota performs the music of the great Mexican composer Manuel Ponce. Today's show is made possible with support from the National Music Museum's generous members, representing 48 states and 8 nations around the world. Special thanks to KWIT and South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Henry Johnston, that young guitarist Joanne just mentioned, has come out on stage ready to play. Henry is from St. Paul. What piece by Manuel Ponce will you be performing?
I'm going to be playing the third movement from Sonata 3.
Now, before you play this, Henry, you were telling me that this piece allows you to choose some interesting voicings. Explain everybody about that.
That's right. This piece has a very beautiful chorale-type section right in the middle, and it's got a lot of block chords in it. And the tricky part about it is it's one of those sections that forces you to make decisions about which voices you want to bring out. So you have to, you know, there's a bottom voice, a middle voice, and then a top voice, and you have to decide which one you want the audience to be able to discern most easily.
Great. We're going to be listening for those voicings. There you go.
Thank you.
Henry Johnston, 16 years old, from St. Paul, Minnesota, playing the third movement of Manuel Ponce's Third Guitar Sonata. Well, I heard a lot of careful and wonderful voicing. I also heard, I just feel like the meat on your fingers has so many different densities. You have so much color there, and up and down the fingerboard as well. Just such a great sense of color.
It's all in the nails.
Okay, all right. Henry, we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the National Music Museum here on campus, and one of the coolest exhibits at the museum is the collection of American guitars. You're a very versatile guitarist, so along with the curator, Ariane Sheets, we asked you to check it out.
Welcome to our Lillibridge Gallery, which focuses on the history of the American guitar.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's very cool.
We have not only incredibly rare early guitars, like an instrument by Antonio Stradivari, the great violin maker, but we also are charting the history of the American guitar, including some of the spectacular acoustic instruments in this room.
All right. So what have you got for me to play?
Well, I have an incredibly rare instrument by Orville Gibson himself from before he actually started the Gibson Company. This particular guitar dates from 1902,
wow.
And it's an archtop guitar. He was the fellow that developed it, which the archtop became the quintessential jazz guitar.
Right.
While I hand you this, I'm going to warn you that it's tuned a bit low because the instrument has no braces whatsoever on the inside of the top. This was part of Gibson's original patent, but it also makes the guitar a bit more fragile than most modern guitars.
Right. You're right about the low body. It's got a lot more resonance than you'd expect. When did Gibson start making the electric guitars, you know, the kind of guitars that Wes Montgomery started playing, or, you know, as opposed to the archtop jazz guitars?
Well, Gibson sort of played around with electric technology as early as 1933, but they didn't introduce their first electric guitar until 1935,
right.
And that was a Hawaiian-style guitar as opposed to a Spanish electric.
Right.
They introduced their Spanish-style electrics in 1936, which was later than some of the other manufacturers.
Right.
But we've got an amazing Gibson electric for you to try. It's one of the rarest and most valuable of any of the vintage electrics. This is a Gibson Explorer that was originally manufactured in 1958, and it was too modern and avant-garde for the market of the time.
Right.
And so a number of them hung around the factory for a while and were released gradually and finished gradually. This
right.
one was finished and released in 1967. It belonged to John Entwistle of The Who, who was an incredible guitar collector as well as being the bassist in the group.
Right.
So do you want to try it?
Oh, yes. I've always loved Explorers, but this is a very cool one.
Must have been, you know, John Entwistle must have been protecting all those guitars from Peter Townsend, you know, smashing them on stage. I love that early acoustic, too, with the low tuning. It reminds me of Nirvana a little bit, that sort of loose, jangly
kind of... Oh, yeah, it's got a certain character to it, for sure.
Oh, fantastic. So glad we got to hear that. It sounds like we could lock you up with that guitar collection for a month. Well, we're glad you happened onto the guitar, and it was just spectacular.
Oh, thank you very
play.
Much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Henry Johnston, 16 years old, from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Did you know that Christopher O'Reilly recently released his latest double CD and audio video Blu-ray disc? It's called O'Reilly's List, and it's a virtuosic journey through the grand transcriptions by Franz Liszt of the music of Mozart, Wagner, Berlioz, Schubert, and Schumann, with Chris adding his own masterful touches. Find it at fromthetop.org. Well, you can find it all over the place, actually. Chris.
True enough. Thanks for the shameless plug, Joanne. I mentioned that the National Music Museum, our host here in Vermilion, has a set of saxophones made by Adolf Sax himself, and our next young performer was lucky enough to see them yesterday. How was that, John?
It was really an amazing experience to see the real progression of the saxophones and to see the whole family, including the bass, and just the staff was amazing and explained a bunch of different things about the development of the sax and just things I learned and just an amazing contribution to what I know.
It's an illustrious history fully illustrated here at the National Music Museum. This is 18-year-old saxophonist Jonathan Corin from Sarasota, Florida. Now, John, you're going to pick up your own tenor sax and perform the music of Villa-Lobos. Will you introduce the piece we're going to play?
We're going to be playing the first movement of Fantasia by Heitor Villa-Lobos.
Jonathan Corin, 18 years old, our saxophonist from Sarasota, Florida, performing the first movement from the Fantasia for saxophone by Heitor Villa-Lobos. Beautiful sound there, Jonathan. Enjoyed putting that together.
Thanks so much.
Wonderful piece. You have another passion beyond the saxophone. Talk about what your parents gave you as a high school graduation present.
So throughout my whole life, really another art form that I've kind of connected with has been food. So I've been really into going to like awesome restaurants around where we live, and whenever we travel, food is definitely a huge highlight of our experience. So we had a trip planned to New York City for the summer after my graduation, and for my present, my parents decided to bring my brother and I to this place called Le Bernardin, which is a French restaurant in Manhattan, and it's like a 3-star Michelin restaurant, and it's absolutely amazing, and it was really just awesome to see the whole organization of the service and the food, and just everything was to a T, and the whole operation was just really so thought out and so perfect in every way. I think we tried to calculate what the ratio of servers to customers was, right. But it was really just amazing.
Outrageous. But irony of ironies, one of the places that has meant the most to you in the world musically has perhaps the worst food in America.
So the summer before my senior year, I had the opportunity to attend Interlochen Arts Camp. And as we know, they do have pretty terrible food. So that wasn't necessarily one of the highlights of my experience, but otherwise it was just absolutely amazing. And musically, it was such an amazing experience for
but,
me.
But, I mean, seriously, you lost like 10 or 15 pounds that summer.
Yeah, I really didn't look too good maybe coming out of it, but musically I was much better, maybe just not physically. So
I know you played in the wind ensemble there and working with lots of great conductors, but there was a particular conductor that you especially enjoyed for mostly his message.
Yeah, so we had the opportunity to work with a number of amazing conductors, and probably one of my favorites was this conductor named Steve Davis. And one of his main messages, especially in the concert, which he tried to convey to both the students and to the parents, just to everybody in the arts community, is that one of the things that he feels is something that's maybe wronged in the eyes of music is that oftentimes music is portrayed as being good for something other than its own sake. And he really feels that music should be promoted and endorsed because it's amazing on its own and for its own merit. People have been telling me that music was great because it makes test scores better and music is great because it makes you a more well-rounded person. But oftentimes people pass over the fact that music is great just because it's great. And I think that's something that he really emphasized. And I think that's something that stuck with me.
In and of itself, absolutely centered, as was your performance, John. Great playing with you.
Thank you so
much. Thanks
for
being with us. John Corin, 18 years old, our saxophonist from Sarasota, Florida. As one last treat from the collection of the National Music Museum, we're moving another forte piano into place, this one built by Anton Martin Timm in Vienna around 1820. And I'm going to have the pleasure of playing some music well-matched for this instrument, again by Beethoven, the first movement of his Waldstein Sonata, Opus 53. Beethoven's composition for the piano changed as the instrument developed during his lifetime. He was always pushing the limits, and a piece of this intensity, volume, and speed wouldn't have been possible until 1804, when Beethoven wrote the Waldstein on the bigger, heavier piano he had just received from Sebastian Erard. So this circa 1820 instrument is totally up to the task. But before I dig into this fantastic piece, I want to thank all of our great young performers today, and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me again next week. Thank you.
From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music.
Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. From the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. And from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.